You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the start of another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. It's the Sunday edition, and thanks for joining us this morning. It is July 4th weekend. We're in full swing. George and I are excited to be here with you today. So thanks for listening. We'll take you around the horn in MLB, and we'll do a lot of football today. A lot of action in the sporting world right now, but we're going to focus on what Chris Sale was able to do last night, George, or yesterday. He moves to his 11th win on the season, still mowing down batters. His 11th start, I believe, with 10-plus strikeouts, which ties Pedro Martinez's record for a start to the season or consecutive starts with that stat. So Chris Sale mowed him down yet again. It's just another good outing against the Jays, and he shut him down.
Yeah, he's been fantastic this season. Absolutely fantastic. And being, I'm hearing a lot of questions like, you know, if you had to pick one starter to pitch one game, you know, who would it be? You know, Sale, Kershaw, Scherzer. It would be hard not to pick Chris Sale right now. I guess the only way, for me, that question would come down to where you're pitching. You know, if it's Fenway Park, all right, maybe not Chris Sale. Maybe you want to go with Scherzer. If it's Yankee Stadium, maybe you do want Chris Sale. But he's having a fantastic season for a guy that, well, for the last 4 or 5 years now, we've been waiting for his arm to fall off because of his mechanics, but he's just been completely dominant.
Yeah, so just to give you a sense of his stats on the season, he did move to his 11th win. He's fourth in all of the majors with a 2.61 ERA. In his 120 innings, George, he has 166 strikeouts, which is the best in the majors. Opponents hitting 197 against him with a 0.9 whip. The only guy whose stats really across the board kind of match that are Scherzer. So, realistically, he'll start the All-Star game for the American League, although Jason Vargas is making a push. You know, he doesn't have some of the same dominant stats, but Jason Vargas up there as well. That being said, Chris Sale with a tremendous game yesterday. Mookie Betts scores 3 runs. He went 0 for 2, but he walked 3 times, scored 3 runs. Hanley Ramirez, 3 for 5 in that game. Bogaerts, 1 for 4. With 3 RBIs, Jackie Bradley Jr., a couple of more RBIs. He continues to be hot on the season, even though he's cooled slightly. I mean, the month has turned over into July, right? But he had just such a crazy June. Hopefully that momentum continues for him. Smoke, 2 for 4 yesterday in that game, but Red Sox take it out 7-1. So just a really big performance, and While they by no means are they pulling away, it seems like the Red Sox are playing consistently good baseball as opposed to the team we're going to talk about in the next segment, which is the New York Yankees.
Yeah, Vargas has about as much chance to start in the All-Star game as you or I do. That's not going to happen. And you think about it, Chris Sale will also be on a full rest. His next start will be Thursday, which means 4 days rest puts him on for next Tuesday. So it'll be Chris Sale starting that game. I'd be shocked if it's not. The Red Sox have no excuse to say it can't be him. He'll be on full rest. He's not pitching Sunday. It'll be Chris Sale. Hopefully it gets Clayton Kershaw.
That would be sweet. Mike and George, we're here for the next 2 hours on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Tony Cincotta joining us later, maybe. But we'll be back. We'll talk Yankees and how they blew yet another game. We're back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this morning. Again, we're here till 10. And hit us up on Twitter today, which is at FNTSY Radio on Twitter. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. And if you wanted to give us a call at 844-843-6879. Make sure you download the app and listen. Free to download, free to listen. You can listen to, as Nando DeFino, our esteemed colleague, says, don't be a weirdo. Don't listen through the website. No need to stream it there when the app is sitting right there for you to download. So I appreciate you downloading it and listening, whether live or on demand. You can listen to all of our content 24/7. So, George, the next game I wanted to jump over to was a game I was watching a bunch of yesterday, which was the New York Yankees against the Houston Astros. Now, obviously, we're both Yankees fans, and I sometimes worry that the show leans a little bit that way. But the reality is this is a pretty big series with them playing the Astros. And it was through the first six innings, it was a carbon copy of Friday night's game where they were kind of being held back. We end up starting a rally. The Yankees end up starting a rally with Clint Frazier, their recently called up rookie, who laced a double into the gap. It was a really cool moment. His parents were there, and they covered it quite a bit on Fox. So Frazier gets on, starts a rally. Didi Gregorius hits a line shot that just sneaks over the wall. Grand slam. Yankees off to the races. They have, at that point, they extended to, I think, a four-run lead. And then it gets to the bullpen. Jordan Montgomery got touched up a little bit, but he was, you know, a typical kind of Jordan Montgomery start, right? You get a bunch of innings. He's not going to go deep into games, so you're going to have to use the bullpen. And the Yankees last night did not get help from the bullpen. They are hit up for four runs in the eighth inning, including Gurriel's go-ahead two-run double down the line. Both Betances and Chapman played a role in this, so just tough times there for the bullpen, George. You're going to have nights like this, but last night was a tough one to have because it looked like they were going to steal two from the Astros.
Yeah, it was a tough night for Montgomery owners. I mean, you look at it two ways. Obviously, the bullpen blew the win for you, so you don't get that. And Montgomery, even though he was handed a four-run lead, he was getting touched up in the fifth inning, and then the sixth inning gives up the home run to Craig, and that was the end of his night. The Yankees got him out of there. And I think Girardi did the right thing because he had given up some deep fly balls, some long outs as well in the fifth inning there. So Girardi made the right move. Green comes in, pitches great, and then Betances really hasn't been good now for about 3 weeks. You know, he's been bad. He falls in love with the curveball. You know, he throws about 99, 100 miles an hour. Throw the fastball. I mean, you have a 6-2 lead, throw the fastball. Make these guys earn their way on. You know, you want to fool around the curveball once he gets two strikes, fine. But he falls in love with it. He got behind 3-1 on Altuve, and then Altuve's running around the bases uncontested. Roman's not even throwing the ball. That's how big a jump Altuve is getting off Betances. And he unraveled. He just unraveled. You know, and it's strange because, as I said, Altuve scores, but it's two outs. No one cares. You know, it's still 6-3, and then he gets the home run to Gattis, 6-4, and then forget it. The next guy gets on base. I forget who it was. And
Reddick.
Chris Carter. Chris Carter can't catch a pickoff throw. It's like, he's got to be kidding me. You know, I understand why Girardi doesn't want Chris Carter on the team. Nobody wants Chris Carter on the team, but the Yankees are so desperate they have no choice but to have Chris Carter on the team. And, you know, Chapman really hasn't looked the same to me, Mike, all season long. From day one, he just hasn't looked like the dominant Chapman. Almost like he's another guy who he actually loves his fastball, but doesn't try to place it at all. Just assumes he's going to blow up by everybody. Mm-hmm. And in today's baseball, you have to place it. You can't just throw it down Broadway. They will hit it. And, you know, Chapman gets touched up again. What frustrates me more about the Yankees more than anything else is they do not – I'm not saying they're the worst fundamental team in baseball. I watch all the games, but not enough to really know this. But the Yankees make so many mistakes. It's careless. It's a joke. You know, you're going to make fielding errors. And I know Brett Gardner, it's unusual for him to do what he did last night, but that was an awful play. You cannot get thrown out there because you went too far to second base on that hit to the gap. It can't happen.
Yeah. So to recap – the Yankees get – to recap, George explaining this litany of errors that they made, there was a pickoff throw that Betances tried to make over to first base, a standard pickoff throw where the guy was not going to be out, but it was thrown waist high. It hit Chris Carter in the glove, trickled off, and allowed them to take an extra base. Fundamentally, Josh Reddick and Jose Altuve are running around the bases unchecked, stealing second and third, both of them. Beyond that, Brett Gardner, it is a one-run game in the top of the ninth inning. And there are two outs, and Gardner laces a ball into the gap, but it is fairly easily cut off by Reddick, Josh Reddick, who faces up back towards the infield to throw it back in. Gardner, in his infinite wisdom last night, decides to take off towards second base, then realizes he's not going to make it because Reddick has cut the ball off. And then he's in no man's land. He tried to scramble back to first base. He gets tagged out trying to dive back into first base to end the game. It was a brutal fundamental mistake when they got the tying run on base, George.
Yeah, it's mistakes over and over. You can't do this. Gardner's having a strange season. He's got more home runs than stolen bases. I mean, that's just wrong. I mean, that's what he's there for. And if you want to get the second base, so it's steal. The Astros are one of the worst teams in baseball at stopping the stolen base. Neither Gattis nor McCann can throw anybody out, but Gardner won't run. I mean, you saw it the other night. It was a joke. I think it was Thursday night in Chicago. Yankees are down one run, ninth inning. Gardner's on first base again with two outs. The White Sox aren't even holding him on. They're saying, go ahead, steal second, and he doesn't run. It's like the earth and all the planets have to be aligned properly for Gardner to try and steal second base. It's strange. He just won't run. So, like I said, the Yankees are they're playing awful fundamental baseball. You know, we've seen this for weeks now. This is not just the last couple of games. How many times has Headley been thrown out on the bases, making stupid decision after stupid decision? Torres, the other night in Chicago, did the same thing. Hit a double down the line, not running hard out of the box. So he's caught off guard when Melky Cabrera throws the ball to second base because there was a runner going to third. The throw should have gone to third, yes. Melky actually threw to the wrong base, but guess what? It ended up being the right play. He got Torres. Yeah. And that was a one-run game. The Yankees lost, and that's one of the big reasons they did lose because the Yankees just don't – they do things like that over and over again. They're not a very good fundamental team.
They've played an incredible amount of one-run games, and their record is abysmal in it. They are currently 9-16. Excuse me. In one-run games. To recap the stats here, Jordan Montgomery and Martez go toe-to-toe. Neither of them gets the decision. The loss goes to Betances, who falls to 3-3. He gave up four earned in two-thirds of an inning. Does not help your ratios. Chapman blows the save. Diaz gets the win. Giles gets his 19th save. Around that game, Correa 2-for-4. He hits a homer with two RBIs. Gattis hit a bomb, 2-for-4. Solo shot there for the RBI. And then Gurriel, really the big star for the Astros, 3-for-4. Run scored, four RBIs. Gregorius hit a grand slam for the Yankees, 2-for-4 with four RBIs. Gary Sanchez had an RBI, and really the guy whose night was, look, he had a really big night in his major league debut. It was probably spoiled a little bit in the fact that they lost because he would have been celebrated quite a bit. He is the first Yankee in history to have a major league debut that with a double and a home run. So 2-for-4, he gets the RBI. And George, your thoughts really about Clint Frazier as a possible fantasy asset here? I assume in deeper AL only leagues, he's already been scooped up.
You could scoop him up, but he's not going to be a big time fantasy asset. He's only lasting with the team probably until the All-Star break. Right. Yeah, once that happens, Matt Holliday should be back, and so should Starlin Castro, and Hicks won't be that far behind either. Once those three are back, I can't see him remaining on the roster. I mean, Ref Snyder's going down. He's another guy who really shouldn't be on the team at all. He cost the Yankees with defensive plays two games this week. Dropped a fly ball and then made an error at second base. Didn't turn. Double play should have turned. And both cost runs, both cost ball games. So Ref Snyder's got to go away. And that really comes down to, you know, who else is going to go? Tyler Wade could go once Castro comes back, but I think Girardi likes having Wade there because he can play all those positions. So I think Frazier's going to be on its way out, too, unless he's just a monster this next week. He will play, I would assume. Well, the Yankees play nine times. I would assume he plays seven games, maybe even all nine. Wouldn't shock me. Girardi wants to play him. But unless he's a monster in these next nine games, I would assume that's the less you're going to see of him until the Yankees suffer more injuries in the second half.
Yeah, so it was fun to watch him. You know, you get a little bit of shot in the arm, a little bit of juice out of a call-up playing like that, and it was kind of exciting to see that. And I hope, you know, as George says, he's not a long-term fix here for this year or a long-term stay at the majors for this year. He needs to get his at-bats, and he'll be down in the minors. But, you know, maybe a glimpse of what you could see in the future. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Rays and the Orioles. We're going to talk a little bit about the Dodgers and a few other games around MLB of interest to you fantasy owners. But, man, George, what can Buck Showalter do at this point? The starting pitching just goes from bad to terrible.
It is. It's bad. I mean, this is not a shock. The Orioles, they're a disappointing team. They have money, but Angelos won't spend it year after year. Is anyone surprised that the Orioles' starting pitching staff is bad?
No.
I mean, Gausman, Bundy, Tillman, Jimenez, Wade Miley. This is not anywhere near close to a championship staff. So they were a team they wanted to be the late 80s Yankees and outslug everybody.
talk about Dylan Bundy's day next. Logan Morrison? Yeah, buddy. Two more homers. We'll be back after the break. Back talking a little Major League Baseball. We're going to do George's Who's Hot, Who's Not a little bit later this hour. But getting back to what we were talking about right before the break is, I mean, George listed off the five starting pitchers. And all of us, I would say, I very rarely can say there was a consensus. There was a consensus that this was a bad pitching staff going into the season. And, like, we had some hopes for Kevin Gausman, as you said yesterday. He's been a disappointment, but some of these other guys we didn't really have expectations for, whether we did or we not, whether we did or we didn't. Dylan Bundy, who is 8-7 on the season, goes out and just burns up the bullpen again. That's really the biggest issue. These guys can't even throw innings when they're throwing ineffectively. So Dylan Bundy throws four innings yesterday, seven hits, five earned runs. His ERA is 4 on the season. I mean, he's been relatively good compared to some of the other starting pitchers, but it doesn't mean much. Asher comes in, gives up 5 more. The Rays pounded the ball yesterday to the tune of 14 hits. They scored 10 runs. And right in the center of it, George, it's crazy. Logan Morrison hit 2 more home runs yesterday. He's got 24 on the season. So, we're talking about Aaron Judge, who's got 27. Logan Morrison's breathing down his neck. That's the last. I mean, hell, I didn't expect those two guys to be at the top of the leaderboard necessarily at this point of the season, and here they are.
Well, I don't think it's really a huge shock that Judge would be there. The guy is a monster. Yeah. He connects with the Vogels. I still know how Melky caught that fly ball the other night. How that ball wasn't about 98 rows out of Chicago still bothers me when Judge hit it. Yeah, it seems like anytime he hits a fly ball, you expect it to be a home run.
I agree.
So when it comes to Morrison, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that something's not up with this ball. You know, I mean, all the records that were set in June.
It's the Logan Morrison corollary.
Come on. He's already hit career high. Gardner's got 15 home runs on pace for 30.
Elvis Andrews hit another. He hit another one yesterday.
Right. I mean, come on. You're really going to try. And I don't care, mind you. I really don't. You know, but to really deny this and say it's all the launch angle. They've all changed the launch angle. Okay. Yeah, right. All right.
By the way, sidebar to this.
Down my back and tell me it's raining.
Sidebar to this. Matt Modica, our buddy and guy that we were doing shows with all during the spring, he tweeted out yesterday that we talked about it yesterday. June was the MLB record for homers in a month. The previous record was May of 2000, and the second place prior to that, which is now in third place, is May of this year. So two of the three greatest, most prolific home run months in Major League Baseball
history.
What was
going on in 2000?
I think we could gather a guess. 87% of the league using performance-enhancing drugs. So
launch angle.
But Modica said that it is not good for the game. He just said, really plain point of fact. Just like that. Obviously, strikeouts are up and homers are up, and there seems to be less happening from a pitch-to-pitch basis. And I think MLB is trying to tweak some things to make that happen. But the reality is everybody's hitting homers now. That's the way the game is played. More strikeouts, more homers. Matt Modica says it's bad for the game. What do you think?
Is it bad for the game? I don't know if it's bad for the game. I mean, I guess it's for the game as a whole. It has become a game of strikeouts and home runs. You know, we've seen this forever now, right? Guys no longer choke up with two strikes. They're going to try and put the ball in play. They're still swinging hard. You know, a lot of players and even some managers, the advanced statisticians don't believe this, but a lot of players, managers believe, hey, an out's an out. You know, strikeout to strikeout. I already said it before. The runner on second base, you know, less than two outs, a ground ball to the right side, that's a different kind of out. That's a productive out. You know, runner on third, less than two outs, there are a lot more productive outs than a strikeout. You know, so you can't convince me that an out's always an out. Sometimes, yeah. I mean, ninth inning, down a run, swing for the fences, you know, with two strikes. I have no problem with that. Something with there's two outs. If you're leading off the inning, maybe not. You know, but other than that, I don't have a problem with that. But it's also the, you know, Sports Center world here. which is kind of ironic since they don't show highlights anymore. But everybody wants to be on that, you know, hit a 900-foot home run. You know, watch where the ball lands. It is the kind of, I guess, society we're in now, where we're all trying to show everybody else up. So, as I said, a lot of that's that. It does bother me immensely. I don't know if it's bad for the game. I imagine ratings are up. So is it bad for the game? Is it bad for the actual game or bad for the people who watch the game, who love the game? You know, maybe it's bad for the game, but not bad for that. I could see.
Well, Matt's more of a purist. Matt's more of a purist, so I would think he's probably leaning towards, you know, it's hurting his experience as a longtime baseball fan.
He probably is, and I would agree with him. Like I said, not playing good well, we talked about the Yankees, and not doing the fundamentals is a pet peeve of mine. You know, when I see that these are professional baseball players, get the guy in from third base. You know, move the guy over from second base. You can't make base running errors. You know, it seems like, you know, I always get on Headley for this because he gives away so many outs because he's the kind of guy, you know, that'll be, whatever, runners on first or second, single to right field, and he's automatically going from first to third. Automatically, and he gets thrown out by 40 feet every time. Oh, yeah, well, I got to make sure I got the run in. That's why they so I ran so they could throw me out. That's dumb baseball. That's only a smart play if there was going to be a close play at the plate and you forced the first baseman to cut that ball off and get you. Then it's a good play. If the guy was going to be safe anyway, then you gave away an out for no reason. And we see this over and over again in baseball. Guys is giving away outs. You know, they just don't do the fundamentals well. And I said, I'm not talking about errors. Errors are going to happen. You know, people are going to make errors in the field. But these errors on the base pairs, not doing things when you're at bat to get the runners over, it's just, in my mind, it bothers me. It's a major pet peeve of mine.
All right. So, you know, I think I'm going to ask that in a poll so you all can respond. Is the record-breaking home run totals good for the game or bad for the game in the long term? You know, I want to see sort of what you think. I think anytime you see massive spikes like this in statistics, it clearly raises an eyebrow. A lot of people are talking about the juiced ball. That seems to be the prevalent theory right now. I can't say for sure. There's some people that have done some studies on it, and they seem to be convinced that that's the case. I would always say that anything that varies from the norm in the manner that this is probably isn't a good thing. How do you quell it? How do you fix it? I don't know. Did they sign off on changing the way the baseballs are made? Maybe. It's always difficult, George, when you have guys that, frankly, are changing the launch angle at the same time that the baseballs may be juiced because it's hard to pull one from the other. Where does one stop and the next one begin? Do you know what I mean? From a theoretical standpoint.
I get it. I mean, the launch angle thing is kind of funny to me. I have no doubt some players are doing it, but it's just to say it's the entire reason. I mean, come on. Right. I'm not saying steroids either. I think you threw out the number 87%. Whatever that number was in the 90s and early 2000s, I don't think it's there now. I think it is less. But I think it's more the baseball than anything else. And I'm not even saying baseball did this on purpose. It could be just that the technology got better. The machinery got better. The workers got better, whatever. And that's why the ball's flying out. But whatever it is, there's something going on is my point here. We're just seeing too many guys who aren't home. Too many Brady Andersons again. Guys who aren't home run hitters who are blasting the ball out easily. You know, and it's unusual, to put it nicely.
Yeah, I mean, we had a little bit of expectations for Logan Morrison's power this year, but certainly we didn't expect 24 in the first half of the season. We're basically at
He's going to hit 50!
I know. We're only
Gardner's
going to
hit 30.
In. Yeah, that's...
Andrews is going to hit 25. I mean, come on.
Yeah. So Logan Morrison, 2-for-3 yesterday, 3 RBIs with the 2 homers. Steven Souza hits yet another homer yesterday. George, there you go, number 16 for him on the season. Is that right? Yeah, number 16 for him on the season.
See, that, he wouldn't bother me because he's got some power.
But Logan Morrison does too. It's just a sheer amount that we
50.
I know. Joey Gallo doesn't even hit 200.
And he won't go to the home run derby. The only reason I want to see Joey Gallo is I want to see Gallo, I want to see Judge, I want to see Stanton. I don't even really care about the home run derby, but I will watch if these monsters are going to play in the game. I want to see
Gallo
knock
say
over
no
that stupid thing. Yeah, he declined, and what? I get it. He's batting what 120? I think he feels embarrassed. He's batting 120. Doesn't feel like he deserves to be there. I get it with Gallo. I do understand. He's the guy who I don't blame. You know, okay, yeah, maybe you'd be a little embarrassed because your batting average is so low. But still, I mean, you got invited. You know, it means the fans want to see you. You know, and I'd like to see Gallo. I'd like to see how far he could hit a baseball. I truly do. You know, I make that joke about knocking over that stupid thing in left center field, but I want to see how these balls go over and over and past that thing. You know, and I want to see that. But Gallo turned it down. He's not going. Judge hasn't said yes yet, although I think he will.
Yeah, I think Judge will as well. So Joey Gallo, just to clarify, he is hitting 193 with 21 homers. He has 108 strikeouts in 280 plate appearances. It's quite a significant strikeout rate.
Might have more strikeouts than his batting average.
It'll get there. I feel confident that it will get there at some point.
Has that been done before?
That's a great question. It has to have been.
No. Well, would you get that many at-bats to beat that if you're batting 200?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what that magic number would be where it could have been done. Like, could you have 100 strikeouts and hitting 093? No, that would not even be possible.
But I mean, by the end of the year. I mean, could he have more than 193 strikeouts with the Rangers still keep him? What I mean is, would any team keep that player in the lineup for that long?
He's in the lineup now. He's played 75 games.
Yeah, that could change after the trade deadline if they make some upgrades there. They don't need that because I'm a little surprised he's still in the lineup. It's literally all or nothing for Joey Gallo.
Yeah, I mean, he's played 75 games to date. That's basically through the Rangers having played 80-something. So he's got 108 strikeouts, 193. Obviously, if it continues at this pace, he plays 150 games. You'll put him at 200 strikeouts. Yeah, put him at 200 strikeouts. So can he hit 200? That would really be the question. Going to put some polls up. Are the home runs good or bad for the game? And also ask you, who do you want to start the All-Star game? It's Scherzer versus Kershaw in the National League. It's actually more compelling than the Sale versus Vargas thing. I think we all know which way that's going. But Mike and George coming back, talking a little bit more baseball. We'll talk about the Nats when we come back from the break. Love that freaky music. Reminds me of like a 1980s or a weird sci-fi film.
70s.
Like Blade Runner.
Yeah, Buck Rogers.
Yeah, you could go a little Battlestar Galactica.
Blade Runner's good too.
Buck Rogers in the 25th century, right? So put some polls up.
I was a big Galactica fan back then, by the way.
Yeah, the Cylons.
Richard Hatch just died.
Who?
Apollo.
Oh. Wow, how did you? I wouldn't even remember that. That was that actor's name. May he rest in peace.
The scary part, Mike. I actually have the Battlestar Galactica DVD set.
You are really a fan.
The original.
You really are a fan.
I am. So. I used to love them, man. They were on Sunday nights after football. I used to love watching them. I think it was on ABC, if I remember correctly. Wow. Oh, come on, it was cool. The little Colonial Vipers and the laser guns and all this other stuff. Yeah. I liked it. I was a big fan.
Well, so, yeah, that's our Battlestar Galactica re-entry to the show. So I put a couple of polls up, or we put a couple of polls up. Pete Considori, our producer, put a couple of polls up. I shouldn't be taking credit for something that I didn't do. I asked flat out, as plain as I could say it, is the record-breaking home run pace good for Major League Baseball, yes or no? Or you're not sure. And on the other one, I think George and I both know that Chris Sale is the guy that's going to start the American League. So I'm not going to, placate you or, God, it's early on a Sunday morning and I can't, I don't want to be pedantic. I don't want to, anyway.
I'm sorry, what don't you want to be?
Chris Sale is starting the All-Star game for the American League. Jason Vargas isn't going to start there, so I'm not going to ask that question. So in saying
Pedantic?
Yeah. Pedantic, yeah.
I have no idea what that means. Never even heard of that.
Condescending. Same thing. Going to start the National League All-Star game, Kershaw or Scherzer? George, could you make a case right now for one guy or the other?
One guy over the other?
Yeah.
No. I think you could say Scherzer. I mean, if you're going just by performance, I think it is Scherzer. But really, is anybody going to get on you for going Kershaw? I think I heard yesterday, Kershaw has never started an All-Star game. I find that pretty incredible.
Is that weird?
He's been for as long as he's been.
It's so weird.
Listen, we all know with the All-Star game. I mean, I'm looking at the baseball schedule now. First thing you got to look at is either one pitching next Sunday?
Scherzer pitches are, that's today.
So he's not pitching Sunday. He'll be on next. He probably goes Friday. He could go Saturday if they have a day off, if Washington has a day off this week. So he'll probably, either way, he'll be rested, so he could certainly start. When does Kershaw pitch again?
I just watched him the other night, so he's probably throwing tomorrow or Tuesday.
So he's throwing Tuesday, then guess what? That puts him his second or his last stop before the break on Sunday, which means he's not even going to pitch in the All-Star game at all.
We'll double check
start
that.
The game, so y'all,
we'll double check
yeah,
that.
I'm looking at it now to see what Dodger's schedule here. But in that case, it's easily going to be. And Kershaw is scheduled to pitch Tuesday, July 4th. So Kershaw's not even going to the All-Star game. He won't pitch at all.
That's a bummer.
It stinks. It is annoying. Yeah. Well, I don't know why they don't move that All-Star game to Wednesday, by the way.
It's kind of crazy that he does, that he has not started in an All-Star game. I didn't realize that. I've seen him pitch in them before. I never realized he hadn't started, but so Scherzer throws today, by the way, and on the season here, there are comparative stats. Kershaw's 12-2, leads the majors in wins, tied with Jason Vargas of the Royals. He's got a 2.32 ERA, 17 games started. In his 116 innings, he struck out 135 batters, whip of 0.91, and a batting average against of 202. Can you figure out, by the way, the homer thing? He's given up 17 homers. It's a really huge spike. Do you attribute it to one thing or the other, or just kind of an anomaly statistically?
Well, part of that is everything we've been talking about this entire show.
True. Entirely true.
All right, so I'll get part of it. That the other part may be, listen, Burt Blyvenlevin's a Hall of Famer, yet he gave up home run after home run after home run. Solo home runs don't matter really all that much. You look at Scherzer, I believe that the numbers with him is he's only giving up 9 runs all season that don't involve a home run. So, it happens to you. These guys, they throw hard. They're trying to get ahead of batters, and these guys do connect and hit some home runs. I don't think it's an overwhelming stat to worry about as long as no one's on base. Yeah, that's when it gets big. You have those 3-run jobs. Then it's important. Solo shots, not as important. But I'll equate some of it, not all of it, but some of it to what's going on in the entire game as itself. Home run after home run after home run.
True. Yeah, it's just going to be odd when you look at the end of the year and he's given up 30 homers, conceivably. Comparing Scherzer's stats, he's 9-5, 2.06 ERA, so basically 20.25, 0.26 lower than Kershaw. Similar number of innings pitched with 151 strikeouts. He's actually pitched a couple of less innings, 151. So he'll get the innings up today and the strikeouts will go up as well. But opponent's batting average against 164 with a whip of 0.78. As George said, he's given up a bunch of homers as well, 12 homers on the season. But, again, nothing to worry about. The strikeout-to-walk ratio is nearly identical for the two of them, and they're both fantastic. So, you know, as you said, George, if you're leaning on performance, I think you go with Scherzer. And this may be moot based on what you were saying with the schedule. So, we'll see exactly how that plays out, the game obviously being in Miami. But would love to hear your folks' votes. Scherzer or Kershaw, who would you rather see start that game? So moving on to the news of the day. I mentioned Scherzer is going to pitch today. Well, yesterday the Nats go down 2-1 at the hands of the Cardinals. Michael Wacha actually had a nice outing yesterday, George. 6 innings pitched, doesn't allow a run, and 9 strikeouts. He picks up the win against the Nats.
Yeah, I mean, you named the highlight there. Wacha pitched very well. He's somebody who really has been disappointing for most seasons. You know, really hasn't gotten, as Tony would say, he hasn't gotten it done. Throws a nice outing against Washington. You know, I watch Washington now. You wonder, you know, just losing Trey Turner for what I assume will be 2 months. They really haven't announced a timetable there yet. I think they're waiting to get that x-ray in about 2 weeks to find out exactly how long he'll be out for. But you wonder, you know, does this take an overall effect on the lineup? They should have more than enough to get by with it. But, you know, all of a sudden, you know, Mets have gained a couple of games in the standings there. Braves, I don't expect the Braves to be there, but maybe these teams can make some noise against Washington now. They've gone from what was at one point a double-digit lead to only 7.5 over the Braves, 8.5 over the Mets. So you wonder if it does take its toll a little bit. Lord knows they still need some bullpen help there.
There's no doubt about it. We talked about it yesterday very briefly where they signed K-Rod during the week after he was released by Detroit just to try to help shore up the bullpen in any way possible. Is he the right guy for the job? I have my doubts. So
no.
Yeah. So the Cardinals ended up using six pitchers in a 2-1 game. It's kind of ironic, but they just brought in a bunch of guys for matchups. And Bowman, of all guys, gets the save. We were talking about it yesterday where he said Trevor Rosenthal was going to get some chances now that O had maybe been moved out of there, although it seemed like Matheny was going to go with a hot hand approach. Is that right? And then Bowman ends up getting the save. He throws to one batter, strikes him out, and gets the save.
Yeah, we've seen this with Matheny said earlier in the week. Now, he really mentioned it more between O and Rosenthal, that he was going to go with whichever guy he felt was going to get the final outs. That's his words, not mine, which means doesn't give any clarity whatsoever. And then if it's Bowman, it's not either one. It's sort of a mess right now. I think Matheny's tired of what O has done, and Rosenthal hasn't pitched much better. That's the problem. It's not like anybody has stood out in that St. Louis bullpen. Well, okay, we're just going with this guy. So it's a mess right now in St. Louis. It's a mess right now in Texas as well as to what's going on here. And this is why, you know, saves are difficult, because it's the most volatile position in baseball. These guys get replaced all the time, injury, poor performance. It's the way to get under a manager's skin when the media keeps asking night after night, well, why'd you blow this game? Why is this guy terrible again? You know, he blew another save. You know, it's the easiest person to just change. You have six other relievers in your bullpen. You find one of them, see if they can get the job done. And that seems to be how Matheny is attacking this right now. He's trying to find someone who can get the job done.
Yeah, and the reason that it played out like this is Trevor Rosenthal, as George just detailed, did not pitch well again last night. He got into a jam. It was they were up 2-0. Rosenthal, in 2/3 of an inning, gave up 2 hits and 2 walks. So Bowman came in to bail him out and struck out the player to end the game. So Gio Gonzalez, George, more evidence as to why you'd prefer quality starts. He throws 7 innings, only 2 hits, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts, only gives up the 1 earned run, but he takes the loss.
Hey, we saw with Sonny Gray Friday night, right? You pitch a gem, an absolute gem. You pitch great, and you get no credit for it. You know, I understand. Listen, in fantasy, you're still getting your ERA, still getting your WHIP. Maybe your strikeouts were good too. But you know, to not get that, that one category filled, the quality start, the W, whatever it might be, it's disappointing. You know, it's certainly disappointing here. So listen, I get it. I prefer quality starts. I just prefer something that relies on the pitcher, not their hitters. You know, in this case, the hitters didn't hit. So Gonzalez didn't get that extra little bonus there. So that's my theory there. It's the only thing. And it's not something I harp on, because we all have to live through it. And generally, maybe it does even out by the end of the year. But I would prefer quality starts to wins.
Yeah, and George, you know, sometimes I don't know that my perspective is skewed. I do my best to talk about as many players as we can, but we haven't talked much about Gio Gonzalez on our shows this year. He comes up, obviously, across other baseball shows, and sometimes I'm listening and people are talking about him. But relative to how well he's pitched, I feel like Gio Gonzalez is maybe flying under the radar slightly. He's 7-3 with a 2.77 ERA. He takes the tough luck loss yesterday, but 104 strikeouts in 107 innings. He's actually pitched fantastic this year, and maybe we don't talk about him in that same vein.
Yeah, it could be. You know, we don't give love to everybody. Maybe for whatever reason that is. It certainly could be, and that's something I'm not going to apologize for. Too bad.
Well, in any event, Gio Gonzalez having a really good season. He's probably lined up for the All-Star game as well. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about George's who's hot or who's not. We got off on a couple of tangents, but one guy he loved is Ellis Andrus. You put him on your who's hot list. He's still hitting homers, George. 11 homers. Raise your hand if you have that one.
I haven't jinxed him yet.
Not yet. George and I come back to close out the hour. Talk some football in the second hour. Mike and George back after this. Back on the Roto Experts in the morning. George is just looking at my league, my baseball league, and I've had a rough kind of week and a half. Remember, I was flying high about a week ago. And this is not a good week for me.
Sure, Mike, because I'm always paying attention to your fantasy team.
I'm saying it happens. You know, you have your good weeks and your bad weeks. But what's funny is, because we're talking about the home run onslaught in this league, there are three teams that have 161 homers. I am one of them. One guy has 160, and the guy in first has 163. So just to show you across the board how the totals, how close they can be and how many teams are hitting homers, I think guys are just getting contributions from all kinds of players, the Logan Morrisons, the Elvin Andruses of the world, and it's kind of skewing exactly what it is we're doing. Anyway, speaking of Elvis Andrus hit his 11th homer yesterday.
That's anything.
He continues to remain hot. He's on your hot list.
He has to be. I mean, I wrote this list on Friday, by the way, before we talked about him yesterday. Let's know how hot he's been. And it's not like anybody doesn't know this. He's hitting home runs. I mean, like I said, he says his career high in the season was 8. He's already got 11. So he's almost, 37.5% higher than that. He's gonna dwarf that. I mean, he might hit 20, 25 this season. I mean, good for him. but when you drafted, here's the problem. You know, when you drafted Elvis Andrus, what'd you draft him for? You probably didn't draft them for home runs. You know, maybe you don't need these home runs. It's a bonus. It's nice, but what do you need? Stolen bases. Yeah, that's my problem with Gardner. You probably drafted him for stolen bases, even though he hasn't run in years. He just doesn't run. As you said in the beginning of the show, he's not a very good base runner. You know, it's strange. For a guy whose speed just should be his game, takes forever to want to steal a base. He's not a good base runner. And Andrew's sort of the same thing. Not that he's not a good base runner, but you need him to steal. Now he's batting third, which means they're not going to let him run. You know, they're going to want him to be a bopper now on that offense, which is just funny to think about here. And you know what? Another thing that's funny when you think about all these home runs, summer only just started. The weather's only now just starting to heat up. Weather heats up, air gets a little thicker, ball stays in the air longer, it goes further. We might see more home runs.
We might. But, George, he does have 20 steals on the year. So he is bringing it. He's been caught a league high 7 times. So he's hitting .301. He's got 11 homers. He's got 20 stolen bases. So he's already delivered more than you could ask for to this point, right?
With the home runs, obviously. Stolen bases, no. I think you probably want them to go 30. He will reach that. At least I think he will.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, because you
like he's on pace.
You do mention the stolen bases, but he's not stealing them lately. That was my point. Since they've moved up to third in the batting order, generally you're not going to have that guy run because guess who's, and you got Beltre, you know, and you got the home run, the Bears are hitting behind you, which you don't want to run for them. And we always, that's my only worry there. But Andrews has been great. You can make an argument by the end of the year, he could be a fantasy MVP candidate for where you drafted him and the numbers he's putting up.
That's a good point. Last guy before the break, Drew Pomeranz, is on your hot list.
Absolutely. I mean, outside of Chris Sale, of late, he's figured it out. And, you always worry about, I always worry about left-handers in Fenway Park, right? Are they going to get scared of that wall and pitch differently? Or do they have to learn how to pitch a certain way around Fenway Park? So he's learned how to pitch there lately. You look at his ERA over his last couple of starts, 1.59. Last 6 games, 2.65. So it seems like he has figured out how to pitch ever since that little blow-up he had with Farrell about being removed from the game.
Yeah, maybe he's refocused. Sometimes those things can play out in the long term to be positives as much as we get a little TMZ about stuff like this and, gossiping about guys yelling at each other. Maybe it helped him. Maybe he and Farrell finally got on the same page. So we shall see what happens to Drew Pomeranz. We'll touch on some of these guys in the next hour if we can, but I want to talk some football after the break as well. Mike and George coming back for hour number 2 on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Feel free to join us.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
We're back on the Roto Experts in the Morning for hour number 2. It's Mike and George. We're here till 10. Might check in with Tony Cicada a little bit later. We've got Fantasy Bagels and Baseball, I believe, at 10. It's 12, then it's FanRag Fantasy Baseball from 12 to 1, and then the producers after that from 1 to 3. So, as I mentioned yesterday, we're going to be going through some programming changes, but you don't need to worry about George and I. We'll be here every Saturday and Sunday from 8 to 10. for the foreseeable future. Things will change a little bit when we hit football season, but that's a couple of months away still. And we're trying to get you prepared for that. We're going to talk some fantasy football here in this next hour. So looking forward to that. George, what was... In you provided a couple of articles. You did obviously your rankings for the exclusive Edge Draft Package, which I do want to mention is available now for a significant discount here for the next couple of days. You can use code 40 for 4. It's going to get you 40% off the exclusive Edge Draft Package. So it's a full NFL season as well. So that's rankings, predictions, breakdowns of every team, every player that is fantasy relevant. 40 for 4, 40, F-O-R, 4, will get you 40% off. So in doing your rankings and other articles, what were the articles that you contributed? Because we're going to talk about them here, so I want to set it up for the next segment.
Yeah, I said rankings are something that mine are in there, and rankings are funny because I change them all the time. You know, if we start talking, generally while we're doing the shows, whether it's old school fantasy or Road Records in the Morning with you, my rankings are up, and you'll start talking about a player, and I'll start, oh, you know, I agree with Mike. Move this guy up, move this guy down. You know, you're fooling around with rankings all the time. It's it can be frustrating, it can be annoying because you're never truly happy with them. I also do the running back depth analysis, and by that column, I'm not just going, oh, you know, Le'Veon Bell 1, David Johnson 2. I'm looking at team by team and really looking more about how you would approach the backups. I think we all know what the starters, what you're doing there, but which team has better backups so if the starter goes down? Because let's face it, running backs get hurt probably more than any other position in football. As far as fantasy is concerned. So I look at that. And then I also did Old Faces and New Places, just talking about players that switch teams. Yeah, how they're going to fit in that system with that quarterback, how they might look fantasy-wise with their new squads.
Yeah, and what I would say to everybody listening is that George brings up a good point, and it could be a good exercise for you as well. You could take a look at your rankings now, so you get in and you buy our exclusive Edge Draft Package, which you should because it's 40% off here for the next couple of days. So that's one. You take a look at the rankings. Take a look at George's rankings now. Then maybe your draft isn't until the first week of August. Well, look at them again in a few weeks and look at them again right before the draft. What you'll see is some influence of industry-wide information and information that George is able to find and whatever, that players will move up and down. Those might be guys and those players that move down, maybe you're getting them for a little bit of value. The players that are moving up, maybe you realize, oh, these are the hot guys. I may have to grab them a round or two earlier than I previously suspected. So I think that's kind of a good exercise. Don't you agree, George?
Yeah, when we get back from the break, I'll tell you a little bit of something about rankings.
Okay, sounds good. That's what we call the tease in the biz, folks. George and I are back after this. We're back. Mike and George. George with a nice tease there. He said he was going to tell us a little bit something about rankings. George, award-winning. Have you won awards? I know you've been nominated. Have you won? We've all won because we won for Roto Experts in the Morning. But as far as your writing is concerned, I know you've been often nominated. I don't know if you've ever taken down the prize.
I don't have any plaques or little knickknacks. So no, I guess
I'm going to get you one. I'm going to get you one for Christmas.
Thanks.
And you'll see, best writer ever. It'll just be that, and you can put it up, and nobody will ever doubt. Nobody will ever doubt that you're the greatest writer of all time. So I promise you a plaque. So I'm on record. I understand. It's going to be a relatively affordable plaque, but a plaque nonetheless. You've got to start somewhere, right?
You
said you're going to tell us about some a secret about rankings. So I suggested that people should look at rankings at different times so they can track movement. But you were going to say on top of that.
I could talk this whole segment about rankings, about how people should go about it. I mean, when it comes to rank, I already mentioned, they change constantly. Once training camp starts and all the news comes in, we get news by the hour, rankings always change. I mean, a running back gets hurt, that could change the rankings for the whole team. You know, so I think people need to realize that. The rankings always change depending on when you're drafting. That's why you'll see players always moving up, moving down. I don't think you should ever go by one person's rankings. You know, if you're whatever league you're playing in out there, you know, maybe you like my rankings, maybe you like Jake Seeley, maybe you like Scott Engel, whoever it is. But I think you really want an aggregate of everybody. Because one thing you have to remember, when we do our rankings, when we put on a site, I know how I approach it. I'm doing it for your standard or your PPR league. If you have any kind of wrinkles in your league, any kind, maybe you're a half-point PPR, a point, or tight end gets a point and a half per reception, that changes rankings. You know, 6 points for a touchdown pass would change rankings. You know, we're just going rankings on the most standard of leagues. You know, we all have people we trust. You know, the rankings of somebody we like best, whatever it might be. You know, even listen, I do my own rankings, but I'll look at Jake's rankings because Jake is very good at his rankings. He's fantastic at it. And I'm not going to be stubborn enough not to look at Jake's rankings to see. And if Jake has somebody that's, you know, 8-10 spots ahead of where I have him, I'm starting to wonder why. I'll do extra research to find out. Is it a personal thing with me? Why don't I have him anywhere near close to what Jake has him? Not that I should have the exact same thing, but why? I want to know why. And then I may go check. Maybe I'll go check other people's rankings. Not associated with Roto Experts. Maybe it's Matthew Berry, and I want to check his rankings to see if I'm really that far off on somebody. And that's what the way you should do it. If you don't, you shouldn't be really trusting all one person because you never know what's behind their thinking there. You should want to get an aggregate of more than one. And that's the way I approach it to this day. I have no problem, you know, sending Scott Engel an email. Hey, Scott, what do you think about this trade? You know, what do you think about this ranking of this player? You know, I want to hear his thoughts, why he may have some. Maybe I'll send that email to Jake. Jake, why do you have him that high? Or Jake has generally explained it somewhere along the line anyway about why he has someone so high. But I think you need to realize that's, like I said, just your league may be different. If your league has any kind of different wrinkle, then you're really going to throw the rankings off.
Totally agree. I think you should, even if you love George and you listen to us every Saturday and Sunday and you read all of his articles, I read all of his articles, but it would be foolish for me to only take his rankings into account. I need multiple. We need to get multiple opinions on this. You're trying to get some sort of aggregated sense of where these players fall, and we're going to have disagreements. You know, Jake is in on Eric Ebron. I'm not really going to be in on Eric Ebron. I don't want to pay. I mean, you're not going to have to pay an extensive price for somebody like that, but I don't even want to pay the price that he's got. Do I think Eric Ebron could be better than last year? Yeah, I would hope so. I just don't have a lot of faith in Eric Ebron. I'll take a look at some other tight ends. But when he's talking about Davante Adams and really how he can be clutch and Tyrod Taylor, these guys we talked about yesterday, you know, it has me thinking twice about it. Tyrod Taylor isn't a guy I'm looking to own, but hell, if he's going to be the 16th quarterback off the board and I take him as the 12th because guys like Jake are thinking you can get him at a value, then maybe I'm going to do something right there. So things to keep in mind, and I think George put it perfectly. You're going to want – there's a lot of different ways to approach it, and I think you got to look at multiple people and get a sense of where they're going to be. Plus, like I said earlier, you're going to have movement in these rankings. So between the wrinkles that George mentioned and the movement that you'll see in the rankings, now is the only dead period in the entire NFL season, right, George? And it's going to come to an end in about 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Once that dead period it comes to an end, which you're right, when training camp starts, is also that's when our job becomes, you know, you go from 6 hours working a day to 10, 12 hours working a day because all the news comes out and it's constant stuff to update. And that's when the fun begins. You know, it's really when the fun begins here. Like I said, it can be tedious. The rankings, like I said, they're fun to do, but they can also be tedious because, you know, I got to update this, got to move this guy around, and something's got to. When you do a ranking for one, maybe you got to update three other rankings too. It just changes a lot of things. But like I said, rankings, you should never have. I don't think you should ever have one person as your Bible. You know, I think that's a lot of eggs in one basket because, once again, you don't know. Did someone move somebody up because they have a personal gut feeling? Maybe there's no rhyme or reason behind it, but a gut feeling about that person. So that's why they moved them up so high. And that could throw things off in your league as well. Like I said, I like to use more than one person. Doesn't bother me. I do trust my rankings. There's a question that we asked yesterday or Friday on Old School Fantasy that we were discussing. You know, do you automatically go by your rankings whenever you're picking? And even I don't do that. You know, I may be fourth round. Also, I get a gut feeling about somebody, and I won't follow my own rankings. Roster construction can also come into it during your draft. I can have a player 5 points higher, but maybe I don't need a wide receiver. You know, I already got four. I need a running back, so I have to go away from my rankings. It happens. You can't be I don't think you could be tied to your rankings all the time. I think you want to follow them as much as possible, but you can't be tied to them.
Totally agree. And we're going to go over one of George's articles here in a minute. It's not the rankings, because you can read those anytime, anywhere. In the Exclusive Edge Draft Package, George, Jake, Scott Engel, all have their rankings in there. Again, enter code 40 for 4 for the next few days, and you're going to get 40% off. You're not going to get a better deal on it. I suggest you get that now. We're going to keep adding content. There's plenty of content in there now, and we'll keep adding it throughout the year, not to mention those rankings and other articles that we are updating. I have my offensive line article should be in there. It should be in there now, but if not, it'll be in there soon. It's a pretty long read. I don't think you have to read it all in one sitting, but I think what you're really going to want to look for is if you're looking at certain players and certain teams, keep in mind that they might be at a disadvantage because of the way the offensive line has played or the way it's been constructed. The team that I will tell you that I'm really worried about is Cincinnati. More than any other. They lost two starting offensive linemen, including Andrew Whitworth, a really longtime veteran of theirs, and Kevin Zeitler is one of the best available guards on the free agency market. So when guys like Matt Modica are really high on Joe Mixon, I'm actually scared about their running game going into the season because of that. So that being said, George, why don't we kick off the running back rundown that you wrote for the Exclusive Edge Draft Package, and we'll talk about it not only this segment but the next one as well. Give me a sense of how this was done, because you seem to have them ranked, but explain how the rank were done for the running back rundown here.
Well, like I said, I was trying to do this without, you know, I didn't want to just do it as far as how you would rank, you know, we have David Johnson 1, Le'Veon Bell 2, or vice versa, whatever, Ezekiel 3. So I didn't want to put it as Pittsburgh, Arizona, Dallas. You know, that, to my mind, that's easy. You know, anybody could do that. Just follow your rankings of how you did it. And I didn't want to go that direction. So I did try and stay away from that as much as I could. You know, so that's the first thing there. I was looking at, as I said earlier, how would I go about drafting, if I was going to draft the overall position, you know, where you needed more than one, so almost assuming that the starter would get hurt. Yeah, how good a backup do they have? So I had Atlanta number one because the backup's Tevin Coleman, who I think, you know, let's face it, you know, a couple of years ago, he had the starting job. Then got hurt, Freeman took over it. You know, so I think Coleman would just do just fine in the starting role. I had Dallas number two because McFadden, with that offensive line, we forget he rushed for over 1,000 yards the year before Ezekiel Elliott came on board and after Murray left. And Alvin Moore is still there as well, although I'm not so sure he makes the team at a training camp. So that's how I approached it. More looking towards the backup rather than the starter.
Total strength of the position, basically, is how this is done. Total strength of the position on a given team. You have basically two starters in Atlanta with Freeman and Coleman. So that's why they're number one. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I think that's exactly the way you look at it. Total strength.
Total strength of the position. So he has Dallas number two, Zeke Elliott, Darren McFadden, Alfred Morris, all three guys who have rushed for 1,000 yards in a season with that offensive line. He had the Saints third. We've talked about Mark Ingram a lot. George asked the question, what does head coach Sean Payton have against Mark Ingram? We're going to find out. It's Ingram, Peterson, Alvin Kamara, and Travaris Cadet. That's a lot of strength at the position. They took a huge hit at offensive line when Teron Armstead went down with a shoulder injury. So I have some concerns there, more so than I did previously, but good strength there. He has the Tennessee Titans number four with DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. So I'm going to pause right there, because the next two teams are the teams I really want to talk about during the break. It's DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry from Tennessee, and then the Bengals with Joe Mixon, Gio Bernard, and Jeremy Hill. We'll break down those two teams and more after the break with George and Mike. It's a very patriotic commercial there from Dane Martinez. I feel fired up, and thank you for joining us on this July 4th weekend. Have a happy 4th. I hope you've already started the barbecues and the fireworks, and please be safe out there. We don't want any situations like we've seen in years past to some of the NFL players, so please be safe when you're lighting off fireworks, if you so choose. George, I assume you have some barbecues planned for these next couple of days?
Well, today I'm heading out to my my sister-in-law's. My niece graduated high school last week, so they're having a party today.
Very nice.
Actually, I don't know what I'm doing for July 4th. Yeah, definitely congratulations to her. Not that it was unexpected. We knew she'd graduate. But looking forward to that later. And, yes, I'll be going after the Yankee game.
So there you go. Obviously, we'll give you a little bit of a sense of what the schedule is for today. A little bit later, Luis Severino is throwing for the Yanks, and we mentioned earlier Max Scherzer. So we'll give you a sense of pitching matchups. But wanted to focus back a little bit on what George was talking about in relation to the running back rundown. So I paused, really. Look, we've beaten the Saints thing to death, so I didn't want to spend too much time on it. I think it's going to be difficult for Mark Ingram owners like myself that have him in keeper leagues and dynasty leagues because we don't know exactly what his role is going to be. He's obviously going to have a good value fantasy-wise, but does he cede a lot of touches to Adrian Peterson? I think that remains to be seen. But they didn't bring Adrian Peterson in to touch the ball 50 times, George. He's going to take a chunk of these carries or these touches one way or the other.
I agree. I mean, we've beaten this to death on old school fantasy. Look at all the evidence. Sean Payton doesn't like Mark Ingram for whatever reason it might be. I don't know why. I don't think they needed to bring in Peterson. I think they could have easily done it with Ingram and Alvin Kamara. I think that would have been just fine with the rookie. They got Cadet there as well, and that I think the running code would have been fine. I don't necessarily think Peterson fits this offense well because he's not really very good at catching the ball out of the backfield. He's more of a traditional runner. A three-down runner, let's run the ball. Let's play well, kill the clock like the Cowboys have done. So that's my only worry here. Other than that, you're not bringing Adrian Peterson, as you mentioned, to touch the ball five times a game. I don't see that happening at all. I think worst-case scenario for Peterson is a 50-50 split. And if he has anything left, he's going to take that job over. I think maybe Peyton trusts him more than Ingram. Maybe Ingram's done something to upset him. It's not like he has an overabundance of fumbles or anything like this, but we saw last year, it seemed like Peyton would go out of his way not to get Ingram the ball, either playing Hightower over him. Kobe Fleener had the one tight end end around that got a touchdown over Ingram. Ingram came out in red zone situations. Just strange. So I have a hard time believing that Peterson is not going to be used here.
Yeah, and they lost their left tackle when he went down with a torn labrum. That's Teron Armstead. He's not going to be back until after Halloween at best. Max Unger, who's the guy that they got in the trade from Seattle a couple of years ago, he already underwent surgery in mid-May and is expected to be out 5 months. So I'm not exactly building a lot of confidence here for those of you that own. Now, the Saints plummeted in these rankings as I was writing them with that Teron Armstead injury. They already had Unger out. That Andres Pete is in his third season, and they've moved him around the line because he hasn't been consistent. I guess in retrospect that Ryan Ramczyk was the last pick of the first round, I think that helps their offensive line some from depth, but how much can a rookie impact your offensive line? We shall see. I mean, they have in significant ways in Dallas and Tennessee. Hopefully Ramczyk is that guy for the Saints. So have to keep that in mind. The offensive line is not in shambles, but it is in worse shape than it was 2 months ago. So that being said, let's move on to the next team, Tennessee Titans. DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry. Great depth there. Love it. They graded out as the top offensive line of Pro Football Focus last year, even higher than Dallas. I have them number two in the offensive line rankings. What do they call it? Exotic smash mouth. And everybody hopefully is going to be healthy. So give me your thoughts here. I am sort of leaning towards the fact that Henry could pick up more touches than DeMarco Murray had a really significant workload last year, which concerns me because historically we've seen guys fall back after that. But give me your thoughts here, how this breaks out.
Listen, I like, Tennessee's already come out and said that they don't see the touches being really all that different than what they were last year. I think they're going to run Murray into the ground if possible. I think they realize they have Henry if he's not successful or if he gets hurt. So I don't think they're worried about that. I think Murray is the number one guy there. That being said, Henry has value as well in fantasy leagues. He's not just a handcuff. He's someone who you might be able to start during some bye weeks, someone who can cover for you there. But, if Murray's is hot that week, he may only get five carries, may not get a touchdown, may not get those catches out of the backfield. So there is some worry there. But I do think he's worth more than just your traditional handcuff backup. So, yes, I do like I like this team a lot. That's probably the kiss of death, by the way. But I like the Tennessee Titans a lot. The offensive line, as you well know, is very good. You got the running game. The passing game should be much better than it has been. Another year experience from Mariota. Just please stay healthy. You make the signings. Rashad Matthews another year. Delonte Walker. You draft the youngster, Corey Davis. You signed Eric Decker. I mean, what's not to like about this offense, Mike?
I think they have a tremendous depth of talent on this offense now. I thought Derek was a great signing from an NFL standpoint. I think we could argue back and forth as who's going to see these touches. Does Rishard Matthews fall back in touches? Does Delanie Walker continue to have a significant role? How much does Eric Decker get thrown the ball? Why did they draft Corey Davis so high? A lot of questions to be answered there, but that being said, it all is positive news if you're a Titans fan. On the offensive line front, keep in mind, in 2015, they had the league-worst mark of 54 sacks allowed. And last year, they finished in the top 10 in sacks allowed. They were good for third in the NFL in yards rushing. It's 2,187 yards. They have two bookend tackles that they've drafted in recent years in Taylor Lewan and Jack Conklin. They drafted as the top offensive line. All their offensive linemen are under 28 years old, George. You want to talk about building through the draft and building properly through free agency. The Titans have put together a hell of a blueprint right here, so I agree. This is all good news. I just do have questions as to how much Henry will touch the ball if everybody is healthy. And lastly, going back to what I said, do you have concerns about his work? You know, those alleged curses, curse of 370, curse of 325, whatever they might be. Do you have concerns about that for Murray?
I mean, somewhat, sure. But I'm more worried about, you know, the curse of Derrick Henry, not the curse of 370. You know, what if Henry is that much better? What if Murray gets off to a slow start and Henry not so much? That would be my biggest worry here. That being said, I have Murray going in the second round of drafts. You know, and I'm in my home league, I'm keeping him in you lose the round you drafted him. I got him in the fifth round last year, so I'm keeping him this year in the round five. So although there are some worries in the back of my head, and when it comes to running back, Mike, I'm not so sure it matters. There just aren't enough to go around. So you're going to have to take chances on somebody.
Well, you just answered a question for me. That's interesting because I drafted Derrick Henry in a keeper league last year where there's a three-round penalty. I believe I got him in the eighth round last year, so I would keep him in the fifth. So you think I'm good to go there. Just keep Derrick Henry. I was planning on it, but that's about where he's been going. So fifth round for Derrick Henry is a good enough value.
It always comes down to what other keepers you have when it comes to value. And in that league, I don't have very many good keepers, such as life. But I think no matter what, I mean, I already said it. I think he goes in the second round of most drafts. You have him in round five. It's three-round value. You'd have to have pretty good keepers not to keep DeMarco Murray, especially when it comes to a running back. They're even more valuable. I mean, we could rank 70 running backs, but really, how many would you really want on your team? 20, 22? You know, running backs run out real quick.
Yeah, very true. Moving on to the next team, the Bengals. Joe Mixon, Gio Bernard, Jeremy Hill. I've always contended that Gio Bernard was a far superior player to Jeremy Hill. I think it's finally bearing out to be the case, but Gio's coming off a major injury, and he's not the type of player that can hold up to a significant workload. Enter Joe Mixon. The Bengals obviously have some questions about Jeremy Hill long-term, which is why Joe Mixon comes in here, but this is a tremendous depth. What worries me is that they lost two starting offensive linemen to free agency. So what are your thoughts here? How is this going to shake out? So many people are high on Mixon. I'm scared off because the offensive line may not be that good.
When an offensive line is not that good or poor, depending on how you want to look at it, sure. I think that does give you some worry here. If there's no holes to run through, I mean, that's a problem. You know, we like to say with running backs, sometimes you got to be your own blocker, which pretty much means you have to make the first guy miss. But what if there's two or three guys you got to make miss? That's just not going to happen. So there's some worry there. But the passing game should take some of that away. You know, Mixon's not going to see too many eight-man boxes. And I would AJ Green there. Eifert back for the full year helps as well. They got some other young wide receivers that I'm kind of interested here. I like Mixon. I have him going in the third round. Fourth would be beautiful, but third round for me. Running back two. I don't think Jeremy Hill will be there at the end of training camp. I think they'll end up cutting him. Giovanni Bernard, you know, he's the third down back, catch the ball out of the backfield. Not really a threat to what Mixon's going to do. So I am not as high on Mixon as some others, but probably higher on him than you are. I am going in the third round.
That was my question. I've been thinking that as well. I haven't heard too many people come out and say it. Maybe I just haven't been paying attention. But Jeremy Hill, it seems like he may not even have a place on this team. They know what Gio Bernard's role. Mixon is obviously going to be here long term. So you think Hill is just going to be expendable and he'll move on to another opportunity, possibly somewhere else?
I think so. I think they are going to move on from, you know, it comes down to a roster crunch too. You can't keep all these guys. And since Hills pretty much does the same thing as Mixon, I think they will make that switch, yes. Maybe they don't. Maybe there's some other injuries in camp to keep Hill. Maybe they try and trade him. Maybe they just don't want to release him. Hill is what he is. He's an average running back, but he does have value.
Yeah. So we'll come back. This is a good article. I like diving into this a little bit because it gives people some sense beyond the who they're going to draft as their starters, who they might need a little bit later in drafts. You and I talk about how running backs get hurt all the time, and who are some of those guys? Maybe the diamonds in the rough. The Jacksonville Jaguars are a team that we could talk about as well. I think we know who the starter is going to be there. Does Chris Ivory become expendable? Is Chris Ivory the type of guy you take a chance on late? If you have a late draft and he gets released, maybe Chris Ivory picks up some carries somewhere. So come back. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about who Le'Veon Bell's handcuff is going to be. That should be interesting. Mike and George back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. 20 minutes to go on this show. Come back and join us. Back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. We're talking about running backs right now, which you can find George's article in the exclusive Edge NFL draft package, which is heavily discounted right now. 40% off. Enter code 40 for 4. That's 40, F-O-R, 4, for celebrating July 4th weekend by giving a huge discount on the NFL exclusive Edge draft package. Tons of great info in there, like George's article. He and I were talking during the break, and I watched a little bit of the Pacquiao fight last night. George, you did not. You followed it a little bit on Twitter. And shocking, boxing has another controversial decision. So this kind of stuff just haunts boxing. If people feel like Pacquiao won the fight. Hornet, Jeff the Hornet Horn, fighting in his hometown of Brisbane,
ooh,
Australia.
Original nickname there.
Yeah, he really went out on a limb with that one. So he gets a controversial decision. I don't really have any thoughts about it other than to say that boxing always has controversial decisions.
Yeah, I'm not a boxing guy. My wife is Filipino, so there have been times in the past where she's actually known. My wife's not a sports woman at all. Doesn't care. But there have been times in the past where she's known that Pacquiao was fighting. But last night, they never even brought it up. I guess he's not a big thing in the Philippines anymore either, as his best days are far behind him. So the only reason I was following it on Twitter was just because I on Twitter, you know, looking at the baseball stuff, and yeah, I saw the stuff for Pacquiao on there. You just told me it was on ESPN. Didn't know that. Not that I would have watched anyway. After the Yankees lost last night, I was a little ticked off, a little frustrated. I just binged the rest of House of Cards season 5.
I used to be friendly with the guy that plays Stamper on that show. We actually used to watch football together in Manhattan. Just a random fact. Michael Kelly is his name. Really good guy and a great actor. He's had huge successes, and I heard he's great on that show, which I don't watch. But, you know how I am with shows.
He is. Douglas Stamper. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's a fantastic actor. He really is. So, and I'm happy to see those successes. So, back to the running backs. Pittsburgh Steelers, Le'Veon Bell, obviously either your first or second ranked player, right? Maybe some people throw Zeke in there if you're feeling a curveball because of Le'Veon Bell's injury history. That's not out of the realm of possibility, but safe to say he's going top three consistently in every draft this year in your PPR drafts and standard drafts for certain. Now, in the last couple of years, it's been wise to have D'Angelo Williams on the hook. Whether you owned Bell or not, because you were likely to get a couple of games out of him, George. And he's been really good, but he's obviously still a free agent. So the Steelers drafted James Conner, who I like as a long-term NFL prospect, at least to play a role. But do you think that's the guy that you'll have to handcuff to Le'Veon Bell? Or are you expecting them to maybe pick up Williams here late in the game?
Well, I don't draft handcuffs. I'm not a big believer in them, not in today's NFL, because mainly most teams, I mean, you need to – most teams go with the running back by committee anyway. So it's just too valuable a spot now just to draft a pure handcuff, a guy who's not only going to play if the starter gets hurt. I need guys who are going to play. Even just 10, 12 carries a game sometimes, I need those guys. So I'm never going with the handcuff. It's rare. Now, D'Angelo Williams was a different case the past couple of years because – you know, you could call him a handcuff, but you knew Bell was going to get hurt, if not suspended. You know, so you're going to get some games out of D'Angelo Williams. He had value anyway. Do I think the Pittsburgh's going to sign him again? I don't know. This is not like baseball where teams do that. You know, oh, eventually we'll sign the veteran back during the spring training. I don't know if they're going to do a sign Williams again. They may think, you know, Connor can handle the job there. I mean, I put Pitrick seventh on this list. I think Le'Veon Bell's the number one player overall. I think he's the best running back in football. He's the guy I want. But he does have an injury history. You know, the suspension thing, you hope he figured that out. But I'm not so sure about that either. But I don't know if I was automatically going to trust James Connor. I trusted D'Angelo Williams. When he was going to come in there, he was going to play well in the Bell role. I don't know if we can say the same for Connor. I don't think we'll know that until we see him on the field. You know, so that's why Pittsburgh's seventh here overall. Bell, great, but I don't trust the backup quite yet. So, no, I won't be drafting him as a unless I'm looking for a keeper. You know, maybe he's going to hit it great, or I really don't trust. I just don't want to see Bell get hurt, and I want to cover myself in case he does. But, no, I'm not drafting James Connor.
Yeah, I tend to agree with George across the board here because James Conner is going to pick up a bunch of zeros where a guy like, I don't know, who could I use as an example? Well, we talked about the Saints, right? There's a few guys that could get carries there. So you're not going to – why are you drafting James Conner if, I don't know, Alvin Kamara ends up being part of the committee in New Orleans or Travaris Cadet is catching passes every week? For just a hypothetical. Whereas Conner, we've seen how the Steelers operate. When Williams was in, Williams was the lone back. When Bell is in, Bell is the lone back. That's just how it goes. So drafting somebody like James Conner is going to be valueless unless Bell gets hurt. So you got to be prepared for the injury, but maybe you're prepared with going. Your strategy will be better to bid on that guy when the time is right, as opposed to taking a bunch of zeros, which you could do all throughout the season. Buffalo Bills are next up. You have LeSean McCoy, Jonathan Williams. You said they'd be in trouble if anything ever happened to McCoy, but I have Jonathan Williams in our dynasty league. I've hung on to him just in case. I felt like there could be something there if McCoy gets hurt. Obviously, he's not going to match McCoy's production, but I feel like there's something there if McCoy was out for any reason. Am I wrong?
I agree. That's why I had them a little higher than maybe some people would think, because I think there is something there with Jonathan Williams, but because McCoy is so good, he doesn't see the field enough. So, yes, I'm on board with you, Mike. I think Williams is a better player than that we just don't know about yet.
Yeah. In that Dynasty League, I picked him up for a song. I just, you know, we're so desperate for running backs in that league. George and I play in a 16-team Dynasty League with 40-man rosters, and I can assure you that there are many guys on all throughout those rosters that are taking zeros every week until something turns around, and then you have a Tim Hightower situation, or you have guys coming out of nowhere to provide points, especially later in the season. I swear, George, I'll always have a fondness for Tim Hightower, because in that league, Tim Hightower, who wasn't even playing and hadn't had carried the ball in years in the NFL, 2 years ago, ended up helping me win that league because I just had him late in the season when he started playing when Ingram got hurt. It's just how it goes in a lot of leagues, especially those deeper leagues, right?
Absolutely. A deeper league, you get hurt, you're generally screwed. But you mentioned all the backups are gone. When we draft here, it's a dynasty draft, but you look on the waiver wire, sometimes you're taking the backup to the backup to the backup. You know, and those guys do become valuable at some point when injuries, this is football. We know it's a brutal sport. There are going to be injuries. And down the line in these leagues, you know, if you end up having the right guy, you mentioned Hightower, perfect example, that guy can win you a league because he's not going to be available on the waiver wire. Someone's already got him. You know, so it's funny how these things work.
We had one guy in that league whose strategy was to, he would go through, you could tell what he had been doing, and I don't fault him for this at all. He was going through the box scores each and every week and just trying to find some guys that could extract some potential value, guys that were picking up 3 and 4 carries in certain situations. And it put him in a position when Jamal Charles got hurt a couple of years ago, he had already, and I was the Jamal Charles owner, he had already owned Charcandrick West. And he fetched such a huge trade price for Charcandrick West that it helped turn his team around. And he started adding higher draft picks and more draft picks. And he was able to turn his team around a lot quicker than you otherwise would in a league like that with so much depth. So that being said, in leagues like that, players end up becoming valuable, as George said, it's kind of out of nowhere. Los Angeles Chargers, I think it's Melvin Gordon or bust, right? But we have players like Brandon Oliver. Kenneth Farrow was a one-week wonder last year. Kenyon Barner there as well. But this is really going to be heavily slanted towards Melvin Gordon. This is no kind of committee.
No, this is. I think you put it perfectly. I think I put it perfectly. Actually, I think that's how I wrote it. Gordon bust.
Gordon bust.
Look at that. Oliver Barner. I mean, these are all okay backs, okay guys to give a series to here or there to give Gordon a little break, a little blow. But other than that, no, it's Gordon or bust here. And I like what it's going to be. I think Gordon's going to be good again. Have you ever seen someone do polar opposites? Rookie year, no touchdowns. Last year, goes bananas.
Yeah, which means the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle.
The Vikings, this is a team that I'm very curious about. We actually talked about this player a lot yesterday, both these players. Latavius Murray, Dalvin Cook, Jerick McKinnon, Bishop Sankey. On paper, looks like a really good depth chart. Sankey's been a washout since he was drafted by the Titans a couple of years ago, but here he is. Hopefully he makes his team. Vikings did a little bit to improve that offensive line. Still below average, as you stated. So Latavius Murray, Dalvin Cook, how's this playing out? And does Jerick McKinnon steal any catches in this offense?
Okay, well, I'm not worried about McKinnon or Sankey at all. This is really all about Murray and Cook. You can make an argument that this duo should have been put up higher on the list. I mean, Murray's a pretty good back, and so is Dalvin Cook. The reason they're not, the offensive line. Once again, we can go back to what you wrote about. Not very good. It's better than last year, but it's far from anywhere near. I don't even think it's average, more or less good. So there's still issues there. I don't trust Bradford throwing the ball down the field yet, which means the safety's going to play close to the line of scrimmage. So I have a lot of worries here. I'd like the two backs. I said Murray and Cook, I think you can go a long way with these two. I think you win a championship with these two, as far as the NFL is concerned, on the right team. Minnesota, however, is just not the right team.
Yeah, I think Jake Seeley, we talked about yesterday, he writes Dalvin Cook being a huge play for fantasy owners this year. He thinks he's going to be the starter even by week one, let alone waiting into the season. So I have Minnesota's offensive line ranked number 26. They picked up the biggest left tackle free agent on the market in Riley Reiff. That helps a lot. They brought in Mike Remmers, who was bad last year in Carolina, but they made a couple of additions. So they're trying to fix it. It's got to be better than what it was last year, which is basically the worst offensive line in the league. I like Dalvin Cook here. If I'm drafting one over the other based on their ADPs, I'm going to take Dalvin Cook over Latavius Murray. Do you agree, George?
Yes, I'm going Cook over Murray as well. I do wonder how they're going to break it up, though, and who's going to be the goal line guy.
Yeah, we'll come back. Close out the show next on the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Back talking about running backs. I'll update everybody on the polls. Closing out the show, coming up next is Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony Sincana and Cha-Cha. We got Al Melchior with Fan Rank Fantasy Baseball at 12. And then at 1 o'clock, the producers will take over, our very own Pete Considori and Chris Bavona. Pete, what are the topics of the day? Probably not Manny Pacquiao's controversial loss in the unanimous decision for Jeff Horn.
No. We're going to be talking about some 4th of July things going on with us, what plans we have. But also a big topic is going to be NHL, and the free agency day was pretty much yesterday. 12 o'clock, the contracts expired for most of the people going on free agency. So we're going to talk about where players have gone. We're going to talk about the Rangers defensive core now that Shattenkirk has signed with the Rangers. So it should be a good show.
Yeah, I was really tracking some stuff on. I mean, I've been tracking a lot of stuff too. I'm into the NBA. We don't talk about it much here. There's not a lot of fantasy relevance now until we see how all of free agency shakes out. Obviously, there's been some big signings and big trades, the biggest one of which was Paul George to Oklahoma City Thunder. But a lot of money being handed out. We saw some deals yesterday, PJ Tucker, and where does Gordon Hayward go? But similarly, the NHL had its free agency period, George, so exciting for both. Despite the fact that this is primetime Major League Baseball season, we've been talking about the NFL, it's prime time for NBA and NHL fans to see where those free agents are going.
Yeah, well, NHL was big over the past week. You had the expansion draft, then you had the entry draft, and now you have free agency. Pretty much there were a lot of signings yesterday. What everyone's waiting for now is, does Matt Duchene get traded from Colorado?
Are there a lot of suitors there, like several teams, or is it focused down to a couple of teams that it seems most likely?
Columbus and Nashville seem to be the front runners, but Nashville maybe in front right now. What the problem is, and we see this in all sports, see this in football, see it in baseball, it seems Joe Sakic, who's the GM of Colorado, just he can't pull the trigger. He doesn't like the offers, or it's just not enough, or he's just worried that whatever trade he makes will make him look bad. So he seems to be one of these GMs who just cannot pull the trigger.
It's tough. They've been in a, you know, they've been in a rut here too. So he may have to, as you've said before, in other discussions, maybe trade the one guy to get a whole bunch of pieces to build it back up. Maybe that's the best way to go. So he's obviously nervous about that.
Yeah, I think so. Listen, in today's general, you know, today's sports, we all know what happens. He's going to make this deal, and it's going to be all over social media. He'll get criticized on Twitter. No matter what deal you make, you're going to get criticized. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and all these other places. People are going to go off the hook. But Matt Duchene, the player, wants out of there. His agent is now getting on Sakic because Sakic said he betrayed him, and he hasn't done it now. It's been 6 months, maybe probably longer than that. So I think it comes down to Sakic is a Hall of Fame player. Maybe out of his league a little bit at GM. This was the team last year that Patrick Roy, another Hall of Fame player, quit as coach in August, which is that's like quitting as a baseball manager in March, quitting as a football coach, same thing in August when the season's about to start. So this is a team that's been a little bit dysfunctional over the past few seasons.
Safe to say. And as a New York Knicks fan and a New Yorker, clearly there's no evidence that people that are in various Hall of Fames could ever be bad at being an executive. Anyway, moving on to different topics, just recapping the polls as we close out the show. Is the record-breaking home run pace good for baseball? 72% of you said yes. So chicks dig the long ball. Dudes dig the long ball. 72%, it's in. 19% said no. 9% said not sure. You're still thinking about it. Make a decision. Anyway, who should start the All-Star game for the National League, George? Who do you think won?
I'm going to guess, I think Kershaw might have won, but I think it's going to be Scherzer because Kershaw's not even going to pitch the game at all.
51% go to Max Scherzer. There's 22 hours left. Feel free to keep voting on that. That's a dead heat. Right down the middle on that one. Foo Fighters playing us out. Have a great 4th, everybody. Should we end the show with the Pledge of Allegiance, George? Nah, sorry, we're out of time, buddy.
Yeah, I'm going to get right on that.
Have a great 4th. Pete, sing us out with the God Bless America. Enjoy your barbecues, folks. Thanks for listening. Have a great 4th. Talk to you next week.